Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for TWiT specials is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey.
This is TWiT Live Special, episode 276, recorded March 3rd, 2016. Launch SF 2016. This TWiT Live Special is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get my special offer, go to Stamps.com now, click on the microphone, and enter TWiT. Hey, everybody, what's going on? My name is Jason Howell, and I am here in a very noisy room in San Francisco, Fort Mason area. You know, it's a nice rainy day outside. It's super gloomy outside. Doesn't matter because we're going to be inside kind of throughout the day taking a look at the Launch Festival. This is just a really cool opportunity for companies, startups, all that kind of stuff to come in and kind of show what they got, show off. You know, what they're bringing to the table, their, you know, the focus of their new, their ventures, whatever, and really get people excited about it. Jason Calacanis, of course, is no stranger to the network. He's the one that kind of got in touch with us about this and kind of roped us in, and it's an exciting environment. There's a ton of people here in this room. What you see behind me is basically just kind of like the big stage area where they do a lot of the onstage presentations, some of the talks, revealing just kind of what we're going to take a look at throughout the course of the day. I know that in my time here, I'm really going to kind of go with the flow. Like, that's kind of my approach today, is to really just kind of take it all in, see what the vibe is, see what people are really getting excited about around here, and go talk to those people. Head over from here on over to the other building. It's the demo pit. And actually, in the demo pit, I mean, it is how it sounds, right? Like, all the companies that are here to show off the stuff that they're looking to show off. They're over there. They're giving demos. We'll just kind of walk around and see what we see. Find cool stuff. Hop in. Talk to them a little bit. Ask them some questions. And who knows? We might be talking to some people that are creating services or creating products that you're going to be using a lot in the next couple of years. You just don't know. And that's kind of the beauty of an event like Launch here in San Francisco.
Okay, so right off the bat, it says it's like hot sauce for your meeting. I don't even know what that means, but I'm very curious to know. What exactly does it mean to have hot sauce for your meeting?
We love spicy food at High Five, so we put hot sauce on everything. So the idea is that you're putting video in every meeting to have that face-to-face communication and productivity. So that's why we're trying to make a solution that you can have video everywhere and have video in every meeting.
Okay, so how exactly are you doing this, and how does it differ from kind of some of the other video solutions here?
We actually have a hardware component with hardware and software integrated into the same solution. So our device is an HD 1080p camera with a wide-angle lens. We've got four high-fidelity microphones in our system with background noise cancellation and echo cancellation. So it lives in the conference room. It lives on top of the TV. And then you actually have a software portion as well. So this is our application. We're also integrated with Google Calendar. So this is the app. It's super simple. It's really easy to use. The user interface is just this. You can join a video call, or you can share your screen to the TV. So right now, if I clicked on share screen to TV, it's going to detect with Bluetooth which rooms are nearby. So right now, if I go to Launch Right, which is the TV on the right over there, now I'm wirelessly sharing my screen, and this is what I'm looking at right now, and it just enables you to be super productive in your meeting without having to wait for somebody to grant you admin access or be the presenter or try to, like, hand the baton over. And it just enables everybody to be really involved and collaborate.
Obviously, there's the hardware aspect, which is kind of set up from a user standpoint. what exactly does a user need to do? Do they have to register in order to kind of receive the call, or how is that connected on an account basis?
So what happens is when you purchase HiFive, everyone in your domain is enabled to use the software. So that means that your domain is whitelisted, and anybody that works at your company can now use this. All they need to do is download the application, and then they would get an email invite from their admin or just through, you know, signing up. And since they have a HiFive enabled domain, then they would be able to join a call.
How long have you guys been working on this technology?
So the company's been around for a little over 3 years, and we've been at market for a little over a year.
So obviously you guys have a spot here in the demo pit. Are you presenting in any way? Like, is there a way for people to kind of find out more other than just kind of visiting here during the event?
Yeah, so on our website, we actually have some interactive demos that you can watch. And also, our CEO will be here on Friday, and he'll be speaking as well.
Excellent. And what is the website that people can go to?
HiFive.com.
Excellent. Thank you very much. What was your name?
My name is Jay.
I'm Jack. I'm co-founder of CafeX, and it's my co-founder.
Hi, nice to meet you.
So very nice to meet you, Sebastian. So, okay, so am I seeing the future demise of, like, baristas as we know it? What is that your goal here, is to shut down coffee shops everywhere?
No, that's definitely not our goal. But what I want to say is, you know, CafeX is trying to create an ultra premium coffee experience, you know, by utilizing robot and automation technology combined with mobile application. You know, what we're doing here, when you talk about, you know, kind of relationship with the baristas, you know, what we do is we really work really closely with local coffee roasters. And for this event, we're working with Supersonic, award-winning roaster. And they actually created a special blend just for us. And we work really closely with them in fine-tuning the recipe, the calibration of the machine, all the way down to how fine, how coarse we grind the beans, the milligrams of coffee we use, the brewing unit, the brewing temperature, so an extraction of the espresso. So really the human touch is really all in the back end. You know, we allow baristas and coffee roaster to deliver the drink that they want to deliver to many more customers that they already have, you know. So the human touch comes in the back, you know, the robotics and the efficiency comes with the execution.
This is a pretty nice size installation. It takes a little bit of extra space in order to pull this off. Obviously, not as much space as, you know, a walk-in coffee shop, let's say. Where do you envision installations like this being in the future for people to find them?
Well, basically, our whole model of roll these out are high-traffic locations. So we're looking for location partners, hospitals, high-end luxury buildings, commercial spaces, large offices, places that have more than 1,000 people and foot traffic to basically roll these out. Why? That's probably one of the most important decisions for CafeX, right? Because we want to get it out to as much as people as possible and make sure they try our coffee. We're basically introducing robotics to people's daily lives.
Absolutely, at a time where robotics are more and more being integrated. So, you know, it becomes less and less strange to, I suppose, see it in real life as that happens. So the goal here is not necessarily to replace, let's say, mom and pop coffee shops, but actually to extend their reach, right? Because you're going to places where maybe they wouldn't normally hit, like an airport or whatever.
Correct, because if you think about it, it's very expensive for them to put one of those large brick-and-mortar coffee shops in this place, and basically CafeX robotic coffee kiosk is a much better proposition for a local roaster than, you know, doing a brick-and-mortar store.
You know, with our small footprint, like you said, compared to a normal coffee shop, you know, it gives us the opportunity to be in places where, you know, mom and pops, you know, they might not be able to afford, they might not be able to go in, spaces where it's not enough for a coffee shop. You know, we can be all these convenient location to provide this service for all the customers.
Yeah. And Jack, tell me about the revenue per square foot. That's important.
Yes. So, you know, we did a little calculation, you know, just really comparing our revenue per square foot compared to all these retail giants. We're almost more than 3 times or 5 times, you know, generate in terms of revenue compared to them. So we're really adding a lot of value prop to this location, creating genuine lot of value. So really utilizing, you know, with the limited space.
Is there such thing as better coffee due to human touch versus a robotic touch? Or do you think this is the kind of thing, like a really excellent cup of coffee can be pulled off by pure robotics?
Of course. I mean, we always like to say, Sebastian and I and our co-founder Henry, we always mention, you know, whenever we pitch someone, is coffee is more in science than art, right? What we're able to do is use these, you know, automated and robotic technology to precisely calibrate, like what I said, you know, to fine-tune the whole process, right? You know,
yeah, and I think consistency is something that sometimes you don't find at your traditional coffee shop. And, for example, they get your name wrong. We never get your name wrong at Cafe X.
Because we're entering it in when we enter our order, right? Maybe.
And the machine knows it, and the whole experience is very user-friendly, right? And that's what we're trying to instigate with this.
About mobile payment technology here. I mean, obviously, this is meant to be a mobile experience. Working with Apple Pay and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, very potentially, we do want to introduce more payment method. Right now, we're accepting credit card, you know, through the Braintree third-party payment gateway, which has been really helpful since the beginning when we integrate their system, and also accepting PayPal. So we're taking PayPal. But yeah, I think in China, especially in all different regions, we do have to accept more payment method. Just really localized. And easy for people to pay. Yeah.
So very soon, this is going to seem normal. That's a great question. How long have you been working on this, and where can people find installations?
Yeah. Okay, so the first part of the question is, we came up with this idea with Henry Hu back in Babson College in Boston. We brought on Jack. His expertise in manufacturing really helped us get to this level. That was in 2014. 2015 was the year, basically, when we started, like, the production. And the whole idea is that we are launching here in the U.S. So hopefully, in the very near future, you can find one of these machines near where you live or where you work.
Yeah. Where you're flying through. Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you so much for talking. Yeah, really, really appreciate it. One final question. Can I get a cup of coffee?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, excellent. Oh, thank you. Thank you, robot arm that's waving at me. Appreciate it. Okay, and now I will try it. It's a good Americano, got to say. Very, very nice. Tell me a little bit about BitSensor. What exactly do you guys do?
So I used to be a hacker, and every company I've hacked into to let them know what the vulnerabilities are, they asked me, Ruben, how did you hack into our system? Well, you can't ask that question to a hacker, right? He'll just steal the data and he's gone. So we wanted to solve that for our companies.
All right, so you are, yeah, you're penetration testing. You're testing vulnerabilities across companies, you know, their networks and all that kind of stuff. When did you get started doing this?
We started a year ago in the biggest university in the Netherlands, University of Eindhoven. And actually, we got the external advisor. He's the professor. He's the head of the research group. He loved the idea so much. He said, you should put this into a company and really run with it. Mm-hmm. And we've only been 1 year in university, and after that, got so busy.
That's excellent. I mean, that's some great pickup. So explain a little bit about what makes BitSensor different. Because, I mean, there are other companies, there are other outfits that are doing penetration testing and all that kind of stuff. Why BitSensor?
So you see a lot of companies, a lot of big companies, enterprise companies actually trying to get security right. Well, what we're doing is very deep down application integration. And that's why an energy trading company loves our product so much, because we're the only company that can integrate as deep into the integration into the application as they need to be secure.
Can you explain a little bit about how you do that? How you get so deep into the application?
Absolutely. We provide an application plugin. You install with one line of code within 5 minutes. That's actually different than from other companies, because you need a consultant for 2 weeks to tweak every configuration.
So you're providing the software, then it's kind of on in the hands of the company to interpret the data, or what about the data that comes from all of this? How is that interpreted?
So we make security data very easy to understand. So usually you need a specialist who's looking all day through all the logs. Now what we do is we aggregate logs and only notify you when the house is actually burning down. Now as well, you can just call us if you're under attack and you need more information about the attacker and get some real professional on board.
Okay. Now, is this like a monthly or a yearly, an annual fee that someone would have to pay to get that kind of service, I'm assuming?
It's $500 a month. And we're a SaaS solution, but we can also integrate on-premise for $2,000 a month.
Is there anything you can show us right now, like that we can kind of see around either, you know, how you deal with the metrics, or, you know, maybe a hack underway, something exciting?
Explain your security product. Very easily.
Okay.
So what we did actually is load log data from a company that got hacked, and we actually got married some companies that got hacked and say, Ruben, can you help us find out who hacked us? So we've built a very simple dashboard that's doing security aggregations in milliseconds. So it's doing it in real time. Instead of for competitors, where you have to wait 30 minutes for a query to return. So you can just get a coffee, get lunch before you get some data on your dashboard. Now today, the Wi-Fi is very slow. I don't know if our product is slow, but we got the demo right here.
Excellent.
And we can explain a little bit like right here. So what we do is make it very simple, I told you. Now, the higher the dot is, the more important the attack is. So the higher the dot, probably here somebody exfiltrated data from your database, okay, and you don't want it. So if I had to zoom in on any attacker, I would just slide. I don't dare to do it because the Wi-Fi is not working. Mm-hmm. But I would just zoom in to this specific pod, and our correlation engine will just show you, okay, hey, that's the attacker. We create a connected graph from the attacker. So we see when he attacked you before, maybe, or if he used different IP addresses or different users or different tools to break into your website, then we export the log to make sure, like, okay, what did he actually get from you if he hacked into your system? Did he steal user data? Did he steal financial data? Or did he steal user credentials?
I mean, all very important information to know, both from a historical sense, but also a right now sense. Is this can you build in kind of alarms and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. We blocked them right away, and we sent you a notification. Say, hey, we got somebody's attacking you. He's probably looking for your database, or he's doing a user-based attack. And we sent you a notification that we blocked him. But you don't want to block too many users from your website. You don't want to block legitimate users. So what we do is we check the database. If we are blocking, are we not blocking any legitimate users? So it feels very safe to block users now, to block actually only block hackers and not the actual users.
Very, very interesting stuff. All right. So I guess kind of just to wrap up, what is the main point you want people to know about BitSensor? Where can they find what you're doing, all that kind of stuff?
Oh, you can find us at bitsensor.io. We give you a 1 month free demo. And you integrate us within 5 minutes, and that's why developers love us.
What exactly is CarForce?
So CarForce is essentially we're the connected car company. You're going to find a lot of other folks, potentially here and certainly in the rest of the Bay Area. Connected car means anything from streaming Pandora to, hey, what's the diagnostics? What does this light mean? That's our space. So we basically take that oh no feeling the moment that your light comes on and turn it into an opportunity, really, for you as a consumer to receive a concierge experience from your dealership and the dealership to make additional service revenue.
How is the technology working on this? Is it something that plugs into the port on the car and kind of feeds through to your smartphone, that sort of thing?
That's it.
ODB, or no, that's old dirty bastard. OBD, there we go.
Yes, the onboard diagnostics, or OBD, to port.
I always do that, by the way.
Not the wrapper.
Yes,
every
exactly.
car is enabled with a free wrapper. So every car after 96 has that port. Our platform is actually built to be data channel agnostic, which is just a fancy way of saying we don't care how we get the data. So either it can come from that port for the 160 million plus cars that are out there that have that port today but don't have connectivity. So that's one really easy hack. There's a couple really good companies, Automatic here in San Francisco, Mojio up in Canada, Zuby, Vinly, et cetera. They make those devices. We partner with them. Verizon Home actually is the one, like the most popular ones right now. So that's one way. The other way is the big wave of already connected cars is coming. This last year we had 16 million connected cars. Again, everything from Pandora to where you can listen to ODB, to actual vehicle diagnostics. So
I would hope you could listen to Old Dirty Bastard.
You should, yeah. So so anything basically along those lines, there were 16 million of those cars last year that were sold in North America. So we're expecting and getting ready for partnerships with Honda's right over there. They actually already talked to us about being one of their poster children, because this is exactly the kind of thing that if you're a manufacturer collecting tons of data, guess what? You're really in the business of creating amazing cars, and you're a great hardware creator, if you think of them that way, but they're not software people. So we're a great partner for them to basically take all of that data and do something productive with it. So.
Yeah, because it really seems right up until now, if you really want to get into the kind of, you know, tapping into the diagnostics of the car and all that kind of stuff, it's something that as a user, you need to A, know that you can do that, and B, then get the hardware in order to do it. What you're envisioning is something that's more integrated into the car from the offset, so that when people buy a Honda or they buy a car, they don't need to do that. It just automatically connects to their phone. It really seems like the way of the future, and I'm surprised that hasn't happened like that yet.
Well, I haven't been around forever, so. No, but I mean, so there's definitely a little bit of a creepy factor as well. So I think even if your car does come with existing connectivity, there's still a role for companies such as CarForce to come in and basically intermediate that data. It creates a level of trust as well. So if it's always your local dealership that's the only one that has all that data, one might wonder, well, how do I know that it's real? It's actually one of the big benefits that a lot of our connected customers are telling us today is, oh, I feel like you're the, people say Big Brother in a bad way, but Big Brother in a good way. Like, you know, you're actually vetting the data, making sure that you're keeping folks honest. So that's kind of fun. I think, again, even with those 16 mil plus, that big wave that's coming, we will be able to continue to play with them and continue to vet that data, normalize it. And then eventually, and this is what I get really excited about, it's really just, it's data. I'm a data scientist myself, so you start being able to say things like, did you know that people in zip code 94102 are much more likely to get into an accident between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on these particular streets? People with Nissan Altimas are safer drivers. You know, Nissan Altimas are maybe more likely to have failure rates in their catalytic converter after 30,000 miles. There might be a recall opportunity there. So you start being able to mine for all sorts of really cool tidbits, which insurance companies and manufacturers, even marketplaces. I come from eBay, eBay Motors. So even folks like those would be really interested in knowing, oh, someone declined service at their local dealership, who obviously gets to write a first refusal because they're our customers, but maybe they're willing to buy the part and fix it themselves. So there's definitely, once you've got that data network, there's a lot you can do with it, which I'm obviously excited about.
Yeah, well, of course, and for good reason. I mean, this really is kind of the age of big data and analyzing it, and you know, it certainly does kind of frighten some people to know that all that information is out there and what happens to it in the long run. But for a lot of people, it's very empowering because it gives them the, you know, access to analyzing their life in different ways that they're, you know, that they've wanted to do before.
Yep. And I think so. You bring up a good point. So here in the Bay Area, and I'm sure a lot of our viewers here, we are early tech adopters. We're tech hungry. Like, we're at the, you know, bleeding edge of every new innovation. Not surprisingly, we're at LaunchFest, the world's largest startup event. So, you know, I think we're a very biased crowd toward embracing tech and really interacting with it. We actually decided to launch in Houston, Texas. And that's really because I want to make sure that whatever we're building isn't just for folks like ourselves that are, like, super passionate about embracing tech. I want to be able to have something that, to your point, the average person can just get into their car, not change their behavior, go about their life, and just at their point of need, when that light comes on, someone reaches out to them. It's like a guardian angel of sorts. So that's what we're doing.
So what you're saying as far as like someone reaching out kind of reminds me of something like OnStar, let's say. Is it, I mean, playing the same playing field as far as that's concerned, or different?
Yeah, so OnStar is actually the largest, globally, the largest telematics data repository. I mean, they've been at it since 98. So they would be a great partner for us as well, and I'm hoping that they're watching. So that would be awesome. So OnStar basically, they still own the relationship between you, the consumer, and the owner of that car, and the manufacturer. So if you think about a car, there's really three parties that are involved. There's the manufacturer who made the car, and there's the local dealership that sold you the car, and then there's you as the person, as the third party. So unfortunately, with someone like an OnStar, they're communicating that, hey, by the way, yes, we are your guardian angel. It looks like you just got into a crash. Europe's actually about to roll out something like that, but not just for OnStar, for every single vehicle. So it is that sense of, okay, I'm always protected. But the downside to that is that the local dealer, who's actually, their livelihood is based on getting you back for repeat service work, they're completely left out of the equation every single time. And that's for data privacy issues. So legally speaking, the manufacturer today, and that may change, can't share data about your car's health with anybody. They can share it with you because you own the car, and they can share it with themselves because they made the car. But the moment that they want to share it with someone that might actually be able to help you, they get in trouble. So yes, OnStar is an option for you to know. If you have an OnStar GM car, awesome. But it's still not going to pair you up. Like, you personally have to figure out where to take the car. Maybe you want to do some research. Maybe the OnStar person might want to hang out and talk to you for a while and figure that out for you. But we actually have a party that's completely motivated, because they're going to get the service work out of it, to figure out ahead of time, what does this code mean that just came up on your dashboard? How much is it going to cost to repair it? Do we have the parts in the shop? And what's our schedule look like? Because they can load balance their schedule ahead of time with our software. So they can go, oh, you know what? If you come tomorrow at 11, it's typically our lull. We can actually get you in, and by the time you leave work at 3 o'clock, because you leave early, baby, you can pick up your car and it's done. Versus maybe today you drop off your car and you're completely worried about, is it going to be a 6-hour fix? So we do fix that. But yeah, no, OnStar, great potential partner for us as well.
Very cool stuff. What do you want to leave people with? CarForce, where can people kind of find out more if they're interested? Or what do you see for the future, I suppose?
Yeah, so go to www.thecarforce, like the Air Force, .com. You'll find us. You'll check out our website. Today you'll notice that it's really geared toward dealerships. So what I want to tell everybody is, if you're lucky, you'll buy a car from a CarForce-enabled dealership, because that means that you're going to get a completely complimentary service. So all of that data that you might have to go out and buy on your own is provided entirely for free by your participating dealership. And again, they've got the means and the motivation to do it. So you get this, you kind of get the winning side. And I feel like, I don't know, that's the business that I want to be in, is a win-win-win for all. Is I win because I get to build a startup out of it. Dealership wins because they get repeat business. And then you as a consumer, you're just driving around and you have this mechanic in your pocket, really. So that's it.
That should be your slogan, mechanic in your pocket.
I like that, yeah. It feels like a song waiting to happen, so yeah.
Maybe by Old Dirty Bastard. You never know. Probably not, actually. That ship has sailed. Thank you so much for talking with us. Really, really interesting stuff with CarForce. Taking a look at a lot of really cool stuff here at Launch SF. But before we kind of continue, I want to tell you a little bit about Stamps.com. This Twit Live special is brought to you by Stamps.com. Sometimes it might feel like there aren't enough hours in the day. You don't have enough time to do the things you need to do. Even when you're working, you know, just the normal 9-to-5, it's never really 9-to-5, is it? You're still making time to do things like go to the post office. The most inconvenient thing, as far as I'm concerned, is making my way to the post office to send something. The better way, of course, is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you get the postage that you need the instant that you need it. You're not dealing with going to the post office anymore. You're doing it all at home. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or any package that you have right from your computer and your printer. We're all very used to doing everything in our computer with a printer. Now you can do stamps as well. It's quick. It's easy. They're free postage scale. Shipping large envelopes or packages is even easier. That postage scale makes it so easy. You set up and things only take, you know, a minute to do with the Stamps.com software open. You simply unpack the scale, you plug it into a USB port, you turn it on, and you can start weighing your packages right away. And you're going to save money this way as well. Stamps.com is just a fraction of the cost of, you know, one of those expensive postage meters that you've seen. Plus, you get special postage discounts that you can't even find at the post office. So right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use our promo code TWIT for this special offer, a 4-week trial, plus $110 bonus offer, including postage and the digital scale that I was talking about. You can get started with Stamps.com today. Within minutes, you'll be printing postage right from your desk. It's awesome to be able to do that, to have the power to just do that and move on with your life. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and then enter TWIT. That's Stamps.com. Enter TWIT. And we thank Stamps for their support. So tell me a little bit about Driversity and what you guys are doing here.
So distracted driving is a big problem. Driversity uses the sensors on a cell phone to make you drive safer. So the fact that your cell phone knows whether your picture should be vertical or horizontal We have algorithms that turn that basic raw sensor data into information about safe driving. So we can tell you if the driver of a car is picking up the phone and watching a YouTube video, or if a car is slamming on its brakes or accelerating too quickly or swerving, maybe down the road if there's potholes that are shaking the phone in a certain way. What we're doing is saying we all have supercomputers in our pockets with phones. Let's use those to drive safer. And in the long term, we can see a future network of mobile devices that are in moving vehicles, all communicating and helping us all be safer. Safety is a huge problem, and we think we can use mobile technology to solve it.
Okay. Well, no doubt we're all carrying little, powerful computers in our pockets, so we have the means to do that. Is there anything connected into the car itself, or is it pretty much entirely existing on the smartphone?
So right now it is entirely on the smartphone. Our idea was, again, just let's leverage these computers that we already have, not try to build something onto the car. But in the future, we see a big opportunity to communicate wirelessly with cars, which are, of course, getting smarter and smarter as time goes on.
Is the thought that this would integrate into a car system, or would it? I mean, obviously, if you're introducing hardware at some point, there's a direct connection. What about kind of having that kind of built into the computer of the car right out of the box?
So that's something definitely that we're thinking about. Thinking about how can we partner with next generation automakers and current automakers who are working on the smart connected car systems of the future. Leveraging the fact that you've got a mobile device which is, passenger-centric. It's focused on what's happening to that passenger, and that's a whole other wealth of information we think we can generate. And again, we can do something that you can't do with the car, which is detect distracted driving because of people using their phone when they're behind the wheel.
So explain that a little bit because, yes, it's so enticing, right? You're on the road. Somebody sends a text message. You know it's important, but it's very difficult for a lot of people to regulate themselves. Are you saying that your app, your service, will kind of force them to be better?
So I think it definitely could. We make an SDK, and we're trying to find as many partners as we can to use our SDK. What it is, it's basically a safety tool. So what we do is say the phone is being picked up and manipulated by the person who's driving versus the person in the passenger seat right now. And then at that point, you can do a lot of different things. You could have the phone start talking and saying, "Hey, put me down." You could have a text message go maybe to your emergency contact, or maybe if you're a parent, you want to know how your kids are driving, whether they're speeding or if they're being distracted when they're driving. We give the tools to our partners to be able to make those kinds of decisions. We also, you could see doing things like trying to maybe turn the phone off or something like that. But we're focused on the information and generating that unique knowledge of, okay, how is this phone being used? Is the phone being used, again, by the driver of a moving vehicle?
Now, do you have an app at this point that you're using to kind of drive this? Or are you, like how long have you been doing this, and where has that kind of led to at this point?
So the company's been around for 2 years. We have a reference app that's sort of a window into our technology, but we say, We're not an app company. We're not going to have a barbecue and say, "Come over and download the app." What we're going to do is we are safety people, auto technologists, sensor folks, data folks, saying, "Let's give this tool to the biggest and best channel partners we can, who can help us drive safety in this really, really unique way." So that we are working with the largest insurance companies, the largest auto manufacturers, huge fleet companies who have got thousands or hundreds of thousands of vehicles of their own, and saying, We can give you a capability that's going to save you a lot of money. It's also going to save some lives.
That last part, very, very important. Cool. What's kind of a final thing you want people to know about your technology, about your product, where they can find what you're doing and following your progress?
So go to driversity.com. It's driver, S-I-T-I. And check us out. We have an open public SDK. Anybody can play around and see what we're doing and how it's really unique. And we think we've got a phenomenal business here with phenomenal partners and great technology. But what excites us most is that we're addressing a really, really vitally important problem. So it's a problem that President Obama and knows about, and a problem that everybody knows about, which is distracted driving and safe driving in general. And with our technology, we think we can make a huge impact on that.
Fantastic stuff. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Jason, thank you very much.
Hey everyone, so I'm here at Launch in San Francisco. I'm standing next to a pretty important person to kind of the future of transportation, let's say. Shervin Pishavar, founder of Hyperloop Technologies Incorporated. How's it going, Shervin?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. It's a pleasure to get the chance to talk to you. Thank you. So explain a little bit. I mean, you are here, obviously, around Hyperloop and the development of this thing that we keep hearing a lot about, but it still kind of mystifies people as far as how this is going to actually be pulled off in the long run. So explain a little bit about why we need the Hyperloop and what exactly you're looking to solve.
Sure. Well, Hyperloop, first of all, is a transportation system that Elon Musk originally came up with the idea. We started a company separately from that because he open sourced it. Brogan Ben Brogan is my co-founder. Rob Lloyd, who's the co-president of Cisco, has joined as CEO. And we've raised $11 million in our Series A last year. In about 15 months, we've gone from zero to about 129 employees. We broke ground in Nevada. We're going to do a 400-mile-per-hour test. It's called the Propulsion Open Air Test in Nevada by the end of April. And then we'll do the full-scale test by the end of this year. That'll be our Kitty Hawk moment. And the way this works is you have a tube that's a near vacuum and you have a pod, and we have basically a propulsion system we've created that will be able to speed up to, you know, 700 plus miles per hour. So that changes the idea of where you live, where you work. We can do cargo, we can do people in terms of transport. And to us, the infrastructure system, you know, is falling apart, and transportation systems are falling apart. They're, you know, antiquated systems that are built in the 20th century, some in the 19th century, like train systems and things like that, are just not modern at all. So this brings the world into the 21st century. That's the concept.
Fantastic concept. So first of all, it sounds like you guys are focusing initially on cargo that is more freight related, let's say, as opposed to people. Why? I mean, I imagine that has to do with safety, but what are the considerations around that?
It's not safety. It's just the business model. You it's a much better business model to move cargo than people. So the cargo will subsidize people transport in the same way that kind of Uber Black Car subsidized Uber X and Uber Pool, and you make it more affordable for people.
What have been some of the big challenges, I guess, the hurdles in creating this? Obviously, it's an infrastructure hurdle by and large. I mean, you know, you're tunneling these things, I have to imagine, and that takes a lot of just random things into consideration. What would you target as kind of the biggest hurdles that you've encountered?
The regulatory challenges, right-of-ways, like those are always going to be when you have to move, you know, that land and earth and, you know, steel and all these things. It's you know, this is not just bits, it's atoms and bits all together.
Sure.
So in the physical world, the regulatory policy has to catch up with the innovation. That always happens in the same way that, like, when, you know, the Wright brothers invented flight, they had to create a whole new policy around that, you know, it has to catch up. We kind of use transportation, the analogy we use is it's the new broadband. We need governments to kind of speed up regulatory changes and allow these types of transportation solutions to come, like Hyperloop and other things coming down the pike.
What has your experience been so far as, like, I guess, acceptance of the idea of that type of regulation, be it in the United States and beyond?
Hyperloop is a movement, so it's inspired a lot of people, including people in government. So we've seen many, many governments around the world be very positively inclined to this kind of innovation because, you know, everyone sees the benefit of it. You know, if you can move things faster, people faster, and do it more cheaply than, you know, high-speed rail, that becomes pretty interesting.
So you have a targeted date of 2020 to have something in place, fully functional. When did you pick that date, and how realistic is it? Like, what really has to kind of, I imagine a lot of things have to come into play in order for you to hit that goal. Think it's going to happen?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it. it's definitely going to happen. The in a year and a half, we've gone from zero to the actual test site, and that's happening in April. So the engineering is complete. Now it's just a matter of actually building, executing. We are building and executing. So we're about steel, not PowerPoints. But, you know, that's in a year and a half. We've got another 4 years to build a complete system, and there's a lot of interest from around the world. So, yeah.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much for talking with us. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, that's pretty amazing stuff.
There you go, in all of its glory. Almost feels like you can get in there and, like, run around. I doubt they'd really let you do that, though, unfortunately. But I think it's slightly taller than I am. Okay, so take a look in there. I think probably more than anything, this is just to make sure that people know that they can't go in there. But there you go. It's a tube. There's really, you know, it's the pod. The pod is the technology, really. A tube's a tube. But the pod that goes inside is going to be the really, really impressive thing. So we'll see what happens once that happens. There's a bunch of teams working on it right now independently. It's an open source project. Basically, Elon Musk open sourced the whole project a couple of years ago. And so, you know, SpaceX is kind of running a design competition around putting pods inside the Hyperloop. And very exciting stuff. Hey, everyone. I'm here at Launch SF with, well, someone who's no stranger to the Twit Network, Jason Calacanis.
Thanks for having me. It's great to have Twit out here amongst us at the Launch Festival. Thank you for coming.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to be here. This is just, you know, there's a buzz and energy in the air. Everybody's super excited to be here because they have reason to be, because they're showing off kind of the things that they're doing. No doubt you are pretty familiar with it. Probably more so than anybody, kind of the things that are offered here. What are some of your highlights, would you say?
Well, you know, for me, our goal is to make this the most open conference ever created. So, as you know, in our technology industry, it costs thousands of dollars to come to a conference. We gave 14,000 tickets away for free this year out of 15,000. We gave those 250 demo pit tables out for free as well. So you have 250 companies in the demo pit. They get a round table. They open up their laptop or they put out their robotic arm, and then we see what happens. And what happens typically is people raise money, they find employees, et cetera. So robotics, huge this year. Drones, virtual reality, augmented reality, all those things are just huge. But some major highlights were the Hyperloop, obviously, because and I'm a small investor in that company. You know, that is becoming reality much quicker than anybody anticipated. The other thing that's becoming reality much quicker than anybody anticipated is robotics. So a company that I had in the Launch Incubator, which is how I actually make my money. I don't make any money in the conferences, but I angel invest. And the Launch Incubator had a company called Cafe X. And they emailed me and said, hey, we're big fans of your podcast, et cetera, yada, yada. And look at this video. I watched the video of this, like, robotic coffee machine. And I said, is that CGI? And they said, no, it's real. And I said, okay, I want you to come to my incubator. They said, how do we apply? I said, you were just accepted. I never met them. I just literally sent them a check for $25,000. I said, get your asses over here. They came in from Hong Kong. They worked with me for 12 weeks, 75 hours on the project, every Wednesday, every Thursday night, and it's here, and it works flawlessly. And this robotic coffee machine lets you have four different types of beans. You could have Phil's coffee, you have Blue Bottle, and you order it on your phone, and as you're walking towards it, it knows how far you are. So if you did it up in your office, you're coming down, Bluetooth, beacons, the whole bit. You tell it when you want it, and then you walk up to a bay, you put your PIN number in, you get it. It's 60 times faster than waiting in line, and it's going to be a dollar cheaper. So better and faster and cheaper, and it's more consistent than a human. So it's the end of all barista employment. Unless you absolutely love making latte art, you can keep your job, of course. But for the rest of us, you know, the machine operates 23.5 hours a day. And it really is a good look at the future. You know, we used to be really, passionate about farming in this country, and then we let technology take over, and we went from 50% of us working on farms to 1%. I think the same thing's going to happen with manual labor in the next 20 years, which is the idea of any of us suffering through some tedious task of making coffee for each other is going to go away, and we'll be released to do more creative and fun things. I'm an optimist. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to release people to do more fun things in the world.
Well, a lot of people kind of fear, to a certain degree, robotics. Well, one, because they're scary to look at, I guess, and you wonder if they're going to kill you. But other than that irrational fear,
the Boston Dynamics one certainly made you feel that way when the guy was beating him up with the hockey stick.
Exactly. And then they sicked a dog, you know, against one of the other ones. Yeah. So, you know, we're abusing them at this point. But, I mean,
they have long memories. So just keep that in mind.
Probably about the longest that there is. But, you know, when I was talking with the Cafe X guys, they were just basically saying, like, you know, maybe this doesn't replace the baristas. Maybe this just puts coffee in a whole lot more places where you're not used to seeing it.
I think that's generous of them. I think it's going to replace a lot of it. Because here's the thing. If, you know, coffee went all the way up to $4 or $5 a cup, you know, in San Francisco, there's places that have $5, $6, $7 coffee. If we can reduce it back down to $2 or $3, make it available all the time, and, you know, save you the 20 minutes of waiting in line, I don't think anybody is going to want to go up to a coffee, you know, to a cafe and say, you know what, I'd like to wait another 20 minutes for my coffee.
And I'd like the human touch.
And I'd like to give you more money. Yeah. Like, there'll be other ways for the human touch to happen, and we'll have those. But, you know, it's a brave new world, and one of the great things about my job, also your job, Leo's job, is we get to look at the future, right? We get to have these crazy entrepreneurs tell us this is what we think the future is, and then we actually see it happen. And the way I've designed this conference is to let 15,000 people come for free, let 50 people go on stage with technologies and show it for 5 minutes, take some questions from judges, and then 250 people to have those demo pit tables. So it's so open, you know, to everybody that people who normally wouldn't be able to afford it come out of the woodwork. So we have an agriculture robot here. And, you know, frankly, the person could never afford a sponsorship or tickets to an event. But they put that, you know, little bit of money they had into putting their, you know, agriculture robot that goes between the, you know, rows of corn and takes care of the soil and takes samples. You know, they use that money to ship it here. And now they're finding investors here, you know. And that to me is just really awesome. Tons of amazing things going on. Another company, Carbon 3D, was on stage that is doing, you know, 3D printing, but it doesn't do it in a 2D fashion. It has the, you know, carbon structure rise out of the...
It kind of had a little squish to it. And yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the idea is 3D printing right now is the realm of, you know, prototypes. With Carbon, you know, their goal is to have 3D printing work for manufacturing. So the idea is, you know, your shoes have different insoles than mine, and at the factory it's printed custom or at a local fabrication plant, and it gets shipped to you. And for orthodontist, you know, sort of stuff, or a stent in your heart, all this stuff is going to be 3D modeled, printed on site, and put right into your body. So we're going to solve a lot of health issues, and there's going to be just a lot of opportunities to really make things safer and stronger. So parts for cars or airplanes, they're going to be able to know, hey, you know, this part on this airplane was manufactured on this date and had this profile, and it failed for some reason. Okay, now we've corrected it. The next part, the very next day, is going to be printed with, you know, oh my God, that horrible plane crash we had. You know, we've now anticipated why that part failed, and we've improved it. So this idea that, like, parts are organic, you know, that in the cars we drive, and, you know, we know each one individually, each one by number, each one has a watermark on it. It's very powerful. Yeah.
So you mentioned just a few minutes ago, kind of virtual reality, AR, that sort of stuff. Is there a little bit of that happening here? I mean, this is like the year of VR, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, we have a ton of people, I think, trying to figure out the tool set. Right. And so when you think about these technologies, what we typically see is somebody comes out with a proof of concept, a platform, and we've seen tons of those in VR over the years. They've all never really worked well. And then Oculus kind of wowed everybody. So now Oculus sort of brought everything back to life. And now what it's becoming about is, what are you going to do with it? Well, in order to do stuff with it, you're going to have to build tools for, you know, content creators or experience creators. So we see a lot of tools, different ways to do. You know, if you own a concert venue, there's one person here who's just made a tool for you to take your 3D camera, make a concert venue, and sell tickets to come to the concert if you're not in the building. So pretty soon, if you love, you know, Bob Weir and you want to see him performing up in San Rafael at his little club, you could buy a virtual ticket. And when you go in there, you could walk around the venue, you could look up and down, you could get a close-up of his guitar solo or step back. You know, it's pretty trippy stuff. In the Dead's case, it might be literally trippy. But, you know, there's going to be all these crazy opportunities for you to really be in the environment. And the idea that courtside tickets are only available to this, you know, 75 people around the court is ridiculous. Everybody's going to have a courtside seat to everything, be able to walk in the locker rooms and just examine the whole world. So it's going to be very interesting. If they can get to, you know, 10 million headsets in the next 3 or 4 years, which is, you know, probably 3 or 4 years out, doable, you know, I think it's going to be a very addictive technology. I think there's going to be a group of people who are going to have them pried off of them. It's good, you know, just like getting your kids off your iPad is pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Getting your kid, I mean, literally, they're going to be fist fights, you know, between parents and children trying to get these headsets off. And I don't think kids necessarily should have them. There's a lot of developmental stuff going on. So you know, I hate to be a Luddite, but this technology is so compelling right now that it's one of those ones like the robots where we're going to have to think this through. Technology is moving at such a fast pace right now that I don't think, you know, we're really thinking it through all the time.
Well, and the fast pace of technology is represented here. I mean, people, you know, people who are presenting here are covering all facets of technology. What is the end game for people that come to launch?
Yeah. So most people come here to get feedback on their product or service, right? And then there are some very pragmatic things. People are coming here looking for inspiration in the audience, just like they might come to a film festival. They think they want to be a filmmaker, so they go to Sundance Film Festival, and they sit in the audience. What they're doing here is, this is the Sundance Film Festival for entrepreneurs and technology. They come, they sit, they got a free ticket, they watch people get on stage and show the Hyperloop, and they go, I could do something like that. I want to show my Cafe X next year. I want to show my Butter Homes. I want to show something. And so that's what we hope to do. But there's very pragmatic things, like people raise money, people get press, people find co-founders, people find employees, and people find customers. So these are the early adopters. The people here are willing to try anything. So the folks from Cafe X are going to make so much money on robotic coffee, I think that they're going to pay for one of the damn machines. And those machines cost like 50 grand. And I think they break even after 3 or 4 months of having them in a venue. So it's... you know, they've been here for 3 days serving coffee. I think they might be going 10x. They might, you know, wipe out 10K worth of cost. It's pretty fantastic, yeah.
Well, Jason Calacanis, thank you for the invite, and thank you for talking with us.
Yeah, have fun. Get back to the demo pit. Cool stuff.
All right. Let's head on over there. Hey, so I'm standing here with Dror of Scio, right?
Scio? Yeah, Scio. How are you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Pretty good.
So far, a good show. What is Scio doing here?
So Scio is the world's first molecular sensor. Fits in the palm of your hand. It scans the molecular fingerprints of materials, sends it to our cloud for analysis, and then the results are showed in your phone in real time.
Okay. Whoa. Okay. Molecular sensor. You just kind of blew my mind a little bit. Explain how this is used. Like, why someone uses this.
So, for example, we can detect the nutritional values of foods in real time. Can detect the makeup of pharmaceuticals. You can use it in agriculture, either in home or gardening or professionally, to know when to pick different fruits and vegetables. Go to the market, you can know which one is sweeter or not. People use it in mineralogy to identify gemstones. We have people doing it for home brewing, so they kind of track the alcohol level. So you get the drift. So basically, if you want to analyze the underlying chemistry of materials very seamlessly through optics, we can help you do it. This technology has been around for about 50 years. It went from huge machines to tabletop to large handheld. They cost thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. This one costs you less than $250. And the next version, actually this small. Actually, it'll be inside smartphones within about 18 months. So
yeah, that's more meant to be embedded into devices. This is more like a standalone device. Consumer targeting, or who's your target audience?
Oh, yeah. So we launched this on Kickstarter. We're number 17 ever, about $3 million in pre-orders. We've got much more than that. We ship to developers. We have almost 2,000 developers on the platform. So shipping to developers, they're developing all type of, like I said, consumer-facing applications, business applications. So right now we're just focusing on building the platform, the developer ecosystem, and some of these companies are pretty big. They want to use it in their quality control. So incoming raw inspection material, you can think if you're a food company and you got something coming in from the field, or you got, you know, a lot of stuff that you put into this big plant of yours, manufacturing plant, we can actually help you.
Do you envision a future where because right now our phones have so many sensors on them, do you see these being yet another one of the sensors that are included on the phones, or is that just too wide?
No, 100%. There will be a billion sensors of these in the next few years. And, just the way you would have never thought 10 years ago that you would sit in a restaurant, take a photo of a meal and share it with, 300 friends all over the world. You're going to be able to sense what's in your plate, sense what you're buying, the type of clothes you're about to wear. You can actually sense your body. There's some cool healthcare applications for this as well. Yeah, I definitely think this is where it's going, and smartphone is just the beginning, because when you think of just broad IoT applications for this embedded inside smart home devices, smart industrial applications, automotive, healthcare, but we're now just starting, so consumerphysics.com is where you can start getting it and develop apps if you want to.
Consumerphysics.com.
All right.
Dror, thank you so much for talking with us.
Now
I'm over here talking with someone about my thumb ring. I'm known for having a thumb ring, for better or for worse, but right now I'm wearing an NFC ring. What's your name, sir?
My name is Jeff Flowers. I'm with NFC Ring.
Excellent.
We pioneered the idea of putting NFC technology directly into a ring, and then we doubled down and put two NFC transponders into a ring, whereby you have a private and public side where you can publicly display your business card information ID, and on the other side, change that to your payment information, et cetera, and you get to control the information you release out.
All right, so explain a little bit how this works in operation. I mean, I remember when you guys did, I think it was a Kickstarter a couple of years ago. We covered it on All About Android and on other places on the Twit Network. Then it was a little simpler. Then it was just a single NFC spot, if I remember correctly. And you could unlock your phone with it, that sort of thing.
So it was always two NFCs built in.
Oh, okay.
However, you could unlock your phone. So we have it baked directly into Android Core. So you could take your phone. Your Android phone is emitting a radio field. As the radio field comes into contact with the NFC ring, that radio signal gets picked up, inductively charging the microprocessor inside, which then unlocks your phone. So, for example, we can have our phone here. I can bring my ring in, and it will unlock the phone. And in addition to that, I can program it to have my public ID. So here's my business card. I use a blockchain-based ID. And I could here start a payment on my Bitcoin wallet. So you get to program it for your application and how you'd like to use it. To program it is as simple as opening up any NFC writer. You could download our application or anyone else's. We are using ISO standards. Any application that works with NFC will work with our ring. So in addition to phones, our rings can used to unlock your pirate's chest, as I like to say. Oh, there we go. Got to get just right. And, of course, your smart door. So here we have our smart door. We can unlock the door itself. I won't do that demo.
Okay. So in the case of that, you're tapping the... I mean, it's got to be... It's NFC, so the proximity has to be really close.
Be right on top. So unlike... RFID tags that can be further away. Here, you have to be right on top of the transponder for the radio field. Now, also, because of that, there are some interesting applications with tap to pay, tap to gain access control, etc.
Okay. Excellent. Where can people find their NFC ring they want to get on the game?
They're shipping right now. They can be picked up at our website on our web store at nfcring.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. I don't know if I'm replacing my ring permanently. I might move it over to my other thumb so I can put my... All right. I'm over here talking with Atif Nori of Emberlight. Tell everybody a little bit about what Emberlight does.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Emberlight socket. It turns any bulb into a smart light. It's a plug-and-play adapter that connects to your home Wi-Fi network. It enables control from anywhere in the world. It uses both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, so you can control it locally over Bluetooth, so it's super fast, and then you can control from anywhere in the world using Wi-Fi. It's also connected to the internet, so we've connected with other products like Nest, IFTTT, Fitbit, and even BMW cars. And it has a dimmer in it, so it's the easiest way to install a dimmer. No hub, no wires. That's it. If you can install a light bulb, you can install our product.
So it really plays nice with all the others. Like, that's the big challenge right now in the Internet of Things is these standards in order for everything in the house to kind of speak the same language. It sounds like Emberlight is doing that.
Yeah, we're big on interoperability. It's very critical for home automation, IoT in general. That's why we use protocols that every smartphone in the world has, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, so there's no hub. And we have an open API that we've already done some connections with, and we'll continue to make those connections.
Yeah. Any special type of, let's say, light bulbs that fit into here, or does it really work with any pluggable light bulb?
So it uses a bulb with the standard base, which is pretty much what most people have. We do have a dimmer in here, so we do say use a dimmable bulb, just like if you had a dimmer in your wall.
Okay. LED, doesn't matter if it's an LED or a different type of you know, CFL, let's say.
Yeah, most modern LEDs are dimmable. If you put a non-dimmable one, it'll flicker a bit, just the same thing as if you had a wall dimmer. Yeah.
Okay, so then, all right, so we know the product, and obviously, like, you know, it's not easy turning your home into a smart home. This makes it at least a little bit more achievable with, without having to, I imagine, invest as much as you do in, say, I don't know, so, you know, Philips Hue or something like that. Do you have an idea of a ballpark cost or, you know, what people are going to spend on this?
Yeah, with the Philips Hue system, you typically have a starter pack because it's a hub-based system, so it's like $200 just to get started, and you don't even know if you'll like it. So we sell these individually for $49. So you can get started with IoT for $49. That's a pretty low entry point into IoT, and if you like it, you can buy more. It's modular, so we designed it that way. And, you know, I can give this to anyone off the street. They can install it in 30 seconds.
Atif, this is really cool stuff. It's Emberlight, is that right? Where can people find all the information they need about this?
Yeah, go to emberlight.co.co.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. Great to meet you.
Excellent. I'm going to make my home smart. All right, I just wandered over here to the Zuli area. I'm talking with Taylor. How's it going, Taylor?
Good. Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. So tell us a little bit about Zuli. What's Zuli all about?
So what we're really focused on is trying to change the smart home experience from coming in, having to pull out your phone, manually control all your devices, to adding the intelligence into the home where it knows who you are when you walk into a room, where you are, what your preferences are, and then passively adjust lighting, temperature, and more without you having to constantly manage and control it. And as you leave a room, things shut off behind you, and so your whole home becomes a more autonomous, intelligent experience.
Yeah, and possibly more energy efficient, I imagine, at the same time. How exactly is that working?
So our product, the Zuli Smart Plug, plug it in, connect any light or appliance to it, so you immediately get control of on-off, dimming control for lamps, energy metering, and scheduling. With three or more in your home, it works similar to an indoor GPS. It's all built on machine learning. So after the first 10 days, it creates a digital mapping of your home. It's very accurate, very responsive in terms of understanding where you are at any time. Works with multiple users. And then now we also enable that presence control to be able to work with your Nest thermostat, Philips Hue lighting. So it becomes a more immersive experience with presence.
Okay, now everybody in the household, I imagine, in order to benefit from this, they're running an app on their phone in order to kind of tap into that?
Exactly. So everybody would log in. They can have shared access between multiple people in the house, and the home is able to identify where individuals are, if there's multiple people in a room, and so forth.
Excellent. Where are you at this stage? Is this a product that people can go online, they can buy, they can Zuli out their home if they want?
Yep. We've been on the market for about 5 months. You can buy us at Lowe's, on Amazon, build.com, on our website, Zuli.io. And so you can go and pick this up. And it works on iOS today, Android in the very near future. And you can immediately start getting your home to be a more intelligent experience.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for showing us all about Zuli.
Appreciate it.
All right, we have a whole lot more coming up. Lots of things to look at here. But before we do that, we want to thank Stamps.com. When you feel like you just don't have enough hours in the day, you're not productive enough, you need ways to kind of trim the fat, trim away the things that aren't important. And let's face it, rushing to the post office probably isn't the best use of your time. I'm sure you would agree. So there's a better way. Stamps.com. You get postage that you need where you are. At your home, you can print it out on your printer. Pretty awesome stuff the instant that you need it. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package. You can do that right from your computer, send it over your printer, and you're done. It's that quick and that easy. And they have a free postage scale that makes shipping large envelopes and packages even easier. You just set it up. It only takes a couple of minutes to set it up. It's so easy. And with the Stamps.com software open, you simply unpack the scale, plug it into that USB port on your computer, turn it on, and you start weighing packages right away. You're going to save money, too, by the way. Stamps.com is a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Plus, you'll get special postage discounts that you can't even get at the post office. So check that out. Now, right now, you can sign up for Stamps.com and use our promo code TWIT for this special offer. It's a 4-week trial plus $110 bonus offer. That includes postage as well as the digital scale that I'm telling you about. You get started with Stamps.com today. Within minutes, you'll be printing postage right from your desk. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Just do it right now, and you'll thank me later. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in TWIT. That's Stamps.com, and enter TWIT. And we thank Stamps for their support. All right, I'm over here with Naki, and I'm talking with, what's your name?
Jake.
Jake Bostrin, that's it.
It's very nice to meet you, Jake. So tell us a little bit about Naki and why I'm standing next to this bright lamp here.
Okay, so Naki is a device that basically makes your existing dumb environment smart. You attach it to walls, tables, doors, any type of regular surface in your environment, And the moment it's attached, the entire surface becomes interactive. So, for example, I have Naki on this table. This whole table all of a sudden becomes connected to your thermostat, your smart lights, all kinds of connected devices. I programmed it to do a number of functions. For example, I gently tap a couple of times on this, that light will turn off. It should turn off. But it's always on camera that things don't happen correctly.
Can I try?
Yeah, go for it. I don't know why. So
I've got the magic touch. It's cool. It's cool.
But it's pretty reliable. I mean, let me try it again. But what's cool is that you can actually, you know, set up three taps to make your lost phone ring or so forth. If you attach Naki to the inside of your front door, you instantly have a smart door. So if someone's knocking on the door, you can get a text message even if you're, you know, on the beach in Hawaii. Or you can connect it to a smart lock like an August lock and set up a secret pattern to lock the door even if you don't have your keys or your smartphone. And our idea really is that, you know, technology is supposed to make things easier, but everything here has, you know, so much technology around us relies on a smartphone app or a switch. And so why do we put a phone between us and the world around us when we can interact with the world directly? And that's really the vision, to literally tap into our world and create a more natural and accessible interface. And so this is a really, so right now we're actually taking pre-orders on our website for $79. We don't charge the cards until it ships out. But what we really want to do is give people a really easy way to add smarts to their home. You don't even have to have a smart device. If you have an Android device or an iPhone, you just download our free app. You stick Naki under a table and you can't find your phone, tap a couple of times.
That's an important distinction that you just made there. You can stick it underneath, doesn't necessarily have to be on top. Like, I can't imagine, like, you know, all dining room tables want, you know, an electronic piece of technology as the centerpiece, but you can hide it away and it still has the same effect.
And that's you hit the nail on the head. Really, the key of this product is that you don't have to see it to use it. You can put it behind, you can put it under surfaces and really add that capability to your natural environment. So you're looking at a wood surface, that wood is connected to smart technology. You put this behind your nightstand and when you go to bed, you know, three taps and all of a sudden with one gesture, you've turned off the light, you've set your alarm, activated your home security, set Nest thermostat to the temperature you want to sleep at. And it's just effortless. There's no friction, no phone you have to take out, no switch you have to reach for. And what's also exciting is that the technology really makes connected devices a lot more accessible to people that normally can't interact with those things. So people with mobility impairments or visual impairments who might not be able to physically reach or visually locate a switch, or patients in a hospital that maybe can't reach a call button, can actually stay connected even if they're, you know, physically impaired. So, I mean, this is an exciting product that creates a delightful experience for everyone, but can really make a tremendous difference in the lives of people that could, you know.
I like that. I especially like the last part that you're saying. Accessibility is a big deal. Excellent. So what's the website?
So it's Naki.com. That's knock, like you knock on a door with an I at the end.
Thank you so much for showing off the technology. Very cool stuff.
My pleasure.
Cool. Get to knocking. So tell me a little bit about, well, A, why you're holding an adorable dog, and B, what is Pound Wish is all about?
Sure. So Pound Wish is a crowdfunding site for pet shelters and rescues. We help them improve their fundraising. Most of our shelters are very, very busy saving pets, rescue pets, and they don't have time for fundraising. So we built a platform to help them improve their fundraising.
Wow, okay. So how widespread is this platform at this point? Like, how long have you been working on this, and what have you built towards?
Sure. So we launched in March 2014, and we have aggregated about 300 shelters that are using our platform today. There's 13,000 shelters in the U.S. There's large, medium, and small shelters. Our customer in the shelter and rescue universe is a small and medium-sized shelter, and we try to give them this back-end tools, this suite of tools, if you will, to help them improve their fundraising. One of the things that we do for them is our dashboard will allow them to manage multiple campaigns, whereas traditionally in horizontal crowdfunding sites, they might go set up a singular campaign. With Pound Wishes, they can set up multiple campaigns to raise funds because a lot of shelters have many, many dogs or animals that require funding. And so we help them become better fundraisers and improve the efficiencies in that area.
Yeah, I have to imagine when you're talking about, you know, dog pounds or animal shelters, there probably isn't a heck of a lot of technical proficiency that's, you know, kind of fed into that industry. So this is a way of just kind of improving that and making sure that more animals' lives are improved as a result.
Absolutely. They're under-resourced, they're under-teched, and they're understaffed, and they're run by volunteers, and they are all very passionate about the cause, which is great. And it's a wonderful vertical for us to be in, because not only are we doing something from a business aspect, but we're actually giving back. And as we help these shelters raise money, one of the stories that we tell is a story of a bulldog named Matilda that came into a city shelter. She was dropped off. She had a severe case of mange. One of our customers, a bulldog rescue, took her into the care, raised $4,000. Matilda got better. Well, in the process, as we socialized the story about Matilda to raise money, one of the people that donated actually became more invested in the story and adopted Matilda in a forever home. So it was a really great success story about how our platform works. So not only do we help shelters become more efficient, but we're actually helping the animals that they care for.
Excellent work, you guys. We really appreciate you talking with us and showing us all about the cool stuff you guys are doing. Where can people go to check it out?
Thank you. Poundwishes.com.
Poundwishes.com. All right. Thank you, guys. All right. Now I got to resist the temptation to get myself a dog. And I'm standing here in the middle of launch talking with Cole from Paskey. How's it going, Cole?
Very well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about Paskey. I know a lot of people are probably already very familiar with what you do because on iOS you're kind of a big deal.
Yes, we just crossed 5 million downloads in our first year. We are the fastest growing security app on iOS and the number one password manager and manager for dealing with passwords, identity, credit cards, basically all your private information that online is everywhere. And people don't take very good care of it, and they use the same passwords, and it's very unsafe.
Wow. So you're coming into, well, let's just say it's a crazy time for security when it comes to mobile devices and all this kind of stuff. So you're kind of walking into the fire at this point, as far as that's concerned anyways. I don't know. How do you stay competitive? Because there are a lot of people playing this game right now.
Absolutely. There are a lot of competitors in the space. We were by no means the first, but we are the biggest. In the last year, we've eclipsed all the competitors and more than doubled their download rates, actually. So really what we do is focus on, in particular, biometric security. We allow you to replace all your passwords and upgrade your passwords to use your fingerprint. So you no longer need to remember them. You can have as many unique, secure passwords that are across every different website, every different app, every different, really on any device is the point. And you can use your fingerprint on your iPhone to log in with them anytime you need access to that secure data.
Yeah, the fingerprint has really opened up a whole other level. Are you guys thinking, I mean, somewhere down the line, are there other kind of sensors, elements that you would love to see brought in? Just kind of like thinking about the technology, you know, it can go in a million different directions. What's a stronger way for a service like you to deliver on the security promise? Is fingerprint enough, or do we need more?
So fingerprint is just a tool for security. It's by no means the only or the go-to even. It's important to have different passwords, strong passwords that are unique to each location or place that you need to use it. However, technology certainly makes things easier, and so we like to give easier access while still maintaining security. So we actually use a combination of the biometrics and a PIN code. Users can customize that as well, use an alphanumeric as well. But it's important to give users that control, which is really what we're about, controlling your private data online in a way that's easier. Because right now, passwords are not scalable. It's a solution that was cooked up by somebody in the 70s, and it's no longer a solution that we use when we have 100 different places or more that we access on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's a messy situation, and that's definitely one good way to kind of isolate it and make it a little bit easier. But with easier comes a lot more complications in the world of security, though.
Especially with IoT, Internet of Things, and how everything's being connected to computers, there needs to be a way to access that data more securely. And Paskey, again, is trying to make that not only more secure, but also easier. There are baby monitors that are just broadcasting where your child is over the internet to anybody that can type in an IP address that works for every single other baby monitor. It's scary. Companies are not designed for security, and now that they're connecting everything to the internet, there's a major gap, and hackers and other malicious people are taking advantage of that, and Passkey is here to hopefully stop all of them in their tracks.
Cole, thank you so much for talking to us a little bit about Passkey. Where can people find it? I imagine, you know, the App Store, obviously. Do you have a site as well?
Exactly. Fingerprint login Passkey on the App Store, or getdoublevision.com/passkey.
Cole, thank you so much for talking with us. All right, I'm here with Francisco at Bounce Imaging. First of all, very nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you.
Does this thing bounce?
It does indeed, yeah.
All right, cool. So tell us a little bit about what this is.
Yeah, so these are throwable omnidirectional cameras. So imagine that you're a police officer and you've got a hostage situation, you've got to search through an attic, you are a search and rescue worker after an earthquake and you're looking through the rubble, and you want to know what's going on inside a space before you make a decision about whether to go into it, both to keep yourself safe and to keep the civilians on the other side safe. And so what you can do is you can throw this in, and as it goes and when it lands, it takes all the six camera feeds and it combines them into a panoramic view, a 360 view like what you see here. So you can look up, down, left, right. Sensei, can you spin it around?
Yeah, sure.
So you can see in all directions. In real time, and immediately know what's going on in a space. No matter how dark or bright it is, we flash it in the infrared. And the neat trick is that we can do all of that image processing in a very tiny little processor. This kind of thing would traditionally take a massive computer to pull together. We can do it in a very tiny little processor, about 200 times faster than traditional methods.
So those images are all being stitched together on the hardware itself. It's not happening over there.
Sent over Wi-Fi to your tablet, to your smartphone, your iOS, Android device. And then we can use that device to repeat back up into the cloud, and your team member, your commander, 100 miles away, can be seeing the same thing in real time. And so you can also put it in like Google Cardboard, look around in virtual reality. So it's a pretty cool way to understand what's going on and make better, safer decisions.
Who are you targeting with this? Is this aimed at consumer? I mean, I can see consumers having a lot of fun with this. Obviously, you're talking about like tactical situations. I mean, is that kind of your goal? Is your goal for everyone?
Eventually. So right now, we're focused on a market that has a clear need, right? The first responder space. But the core technology behind it, we think could work really well with particularly partners that really understand the consumer space to help them reduce their requirements to make these fully immersive cameras, right? Right now, one of these cameras, we have engineers like in the Netherlands, and we can be sitting in their living room in real time, you know, with a second latency. And you can imagine going to your cousin's wedding that you couldn't make in VR by having one of these things in a pole, right? So there's a lot of really cool and interesting places to go with it. We're focused where our mission is right now in the, you know, first responder space, people that need it desperately now.
Very, very cool stuff. How much of an impact is it rated to accept, I guess?
We drop this thing 26 times from 7 feet onto concrete. So we knock it to pieces, basically. It's supposed to take quite a beating. It goes through windows. We've had departments put it through windows. Yeah, so.
Very, very cool stuff. So that's Bounce Imaging. Francisco, thanks so much for talking with us.
You. Appreciate your time.
All right, behind me is someone dancing around a little bit inside an HTC Vive, demonstrating, I guess, the power of your technology. Immersive Entertainment is the company. What's your name?
Jeroen van den Bos.
Very nice to meet you. So tell us a little bit about Immersive. What's this all about?
Yeah, so Immersive Entertainment, we create virtual reality experiences. So it's not a game you play, it's not a 360 video you watch once. It's more like a living world you visit in virtual reality. And you can spend as much time as you want in it. You can do this a million times, it will never be the same. That's one of the unique things about us. Everything in the environment, nothing is scripted. Everything is dynamic. We have dynamic cloud formations. We have a dynamic day-night cycle. And even all the animals inside the Grand Canyon, we give them eyes and ears so they can see the environment. And we give them a little AI brain so they can interact with the environment. They can react to each other and they can react to the player as well. So the combination is like a really immersive living world you can just spend some time in.
Wow. So you've talked a little bit about the Grand Canyon. What are some of the other environments that you're kind of working on, if you don't mind? Yeah.
Right now, we're just focusing on finishing this one, which is our first living world. But we have about 20 other ideas and that we're planning to develop in the next 3 years. One of them would be, for example, the Great Barrier Reef, go scuba diving and have all the different species of fish around you. and just it's more like an exploratory title, that one. Yeah.
How expansive are these worlds? Is it kind of, I mean, I imagine when you're in the world of VR, like you could literally open it up for miles and miles, but that takes a lot of development. Yeah. So I'm sure that you guys run up against limits. How big are these worlds?
Well, that's the thing. We keep developing it. So think of it like this way. Instead of you purchase the title, it's a one shot off, and you do it once and it's done. You actually buy a ticket to have entry to the virtual Grand Canyon, and the world itself will keep evolving, will keep becoming more and bigger and bigger and more immersive.
And what about platforms? Obviously, you're showing this off on an HTC Vive. We've got a platform war that's emerging right now with VR. Do you plan on being everywhere for all people kind of thing?
Absolutely. So this title right now works on both Oculus Rift and HTC Vive. The only difference is because with HTC Vive, you have the motion controllers. The HTC Vive version, you're standing on a paddle, stand a paddleboard, and you have to paddle yourself. While if you play it in the Oculus Rift version, you're sitting in a kayak and you use the gamepad controllers to navigate.
Immersive entertainment. Where can people find all the cool stuff you're doing when they get their VR rig in the next couple of months?
Well, actually, we are right now already on Steam Early Access, so people can buy into our beta and help us develop and make it even better. So just go to Steam, look for Grand Canyon VR Experience, and you'll find us.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Man, I got to do that. All right, so I'm here with Biba. Actually, I know that's probably not your name. What's your name?
I'm Mike.
Mike, very nice to meet you, Mike. Thank you for talking with us about this today. So I'm very curious, and I did not ask you coming here what this is all about because I really want to be surprised, but I'm very intrigued. Tell me all about Biba.
So essentially what we're trying to do at Biba is we're trying to counteract the trend amongst kids these days where they've been spending a ton of time in front of screens and playing video games, and as a result have spent a lot less time being physically active and playing outside. As we know, video games are here, technology is here, kids love them. Telling them not to play is not really going to be an effective method. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to take the things that they love about video games and sort of bring those to these physical play spaces. So they're still getting things they love, like rewards, collection mechanics, badges, all those sorts of things. But the way that they earn those is through physical play as opposed to through actual video games.
So you're gamifying play.
Yes, so what we're doing is we're able to gamify the data around playground usage, because the way that we achieve this is we have these augmented reality tags over here, and the way that they work is they're attached to physical pieces of playground equipment, as you play the games, as you interact with them, it sort of creates these sort of engaging moments on the phone using AR. It might trigger new levels. If it's a racing game, it'll give you new vehicles, those sorts of things. But because we can use the location services inside the phone, because we can track the equipment that's being used by people, we can actually start to collect this data around playgrounds that's never existed before. Right now, when a city puts a playground in the ground, they have no way of seeing how popular it is, when people are showing up, how many people are showing up, which pieces of playground equipment are more popular than others. But what we can do is we can track all of that information. We can start to aggregate all of it, generate these reports, tie that into things like census data to say this is a community that would really benefit from having something like this. And because we know that this neighborhood seems to like, you know, swings more than slides, we can use that to inform the actual playground design and do some really, really cool things about that.
Okay, anytime you bring data and tracking into the world of kids, people get up in arms about, you know, kind of privacy and all that kind of stuff. What's your consideration on that here?
So we obviously know that that's a huge thing, and we've decided that we want to make that one of the features of our product. We want to hit the gold standard and beyond. So it's super, super important to us that there's no personally identifiable data for children. We want to make sure there's no way to be able to look at those two things together. So what we do is we sort of segment and encrypt all of that data. So anything that's sort of specific to how you're doing inside the games themselves is all kept on the phone, but in our back end is when we sort of track the separated data, and that's when we look at things like, you know, obscured geolocative data. So we're not going to say it's right in this particular location, but we sort of generate a quad tile around that, sort of approximates where that location is. So we're able to see, you know, the general areas where these playground equipment are being used. We can track the equipment. We can see how long these gameplay sessions are, how many people are using them, those sorts of things. But it could never be tracked back to a particular family or a particular phone or a particular child. Obviously, we don't want to get anywhere in trouble with those sorts of things. So that's been a huge focus of ours. And again, it's a feature for our product as opposed to something that's gotten in the way.
Where can people find all the stuff you're doing with Biba?
You can find out more information at playbiba.com, PLAYBIBA. You can sign up for the newsletter, find out about any sort of new product updates, and as playgrounds start to get installed near you.
Excellent. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks so much.
All right, so there you have it. We've taken a look at a ton of awesome technology here, and everybody's just super pumped up. That's kind of what it's all about, right? Like, they're bringing their technology to the table. They've been working on this stuff for a couple of years now, and they're just looking for other people to be as excited about it as they are. And when you're here, you kind of can't help but get swept up in it. We've got smart home stuff. We've got VR stuff. We've got, you know... lots of stuff I didn't have a chance to see, unfortunately, but that's the beauty of it, because there are literally hundreds of people here showing off their wares. And the Hyperloop, nothing cooler than that, seeing just how huge that thing is. So I hope you guys have enjoyed it. We've got a lot of live specials planned for this year for TWiT, so definitely tune in. Go to twit.tv/specials. That way you won't miss any of our live events coming up in the near future. My name is Jason Howell for twit.tv. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you guys soon.